Good morning, everyone. Live from Nashville, I'm with the amazing James Maslow. It's Office Hours, the Celebrity Entrepreneur Edition, the Celebrity Entrepreneur Show with my boy, James Maslow. Today, we have a huge treat, my brother, because not only are we here in person together, and we're having like a coaching session, the Uncle Dave session. You're one of my favorite people, but we are blessed. We're bringing on one of my favorite guests.
Yes.
Every time he talks, he's difficult to interview. I just want to tell everyone up front, because you get so caught up into his story, you forget you're interviewing him.
Isn't that the best interview, though, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You're not really searching for questions because they just keep giving wonderful answers.
Right. Well, and then you're like, oh, shit, I'm supposed to ask another one because you're just so engaged.
That's perfect for today, since today is quite early and I'm still getting through my first cup of coffee. So let him take it away.
Well, it's West Coast time for him, and he's coming right from our federal system. As you'll find out.
You mentioned briefly. I'm excited to ask a question about that.
He has a different rental plan than us in our multi-million dollar studios around the world, but he's going to get there again. But we'll bring on our friend Owen Hansen. Right, he's on. The California kid.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, brother. How are you?
I'm good. Just waking up. It's 6 a.m. over here in the California area, you know, living in the Federal Bureau halfway house. I had to get approval to be in this private room so I could speak to you guys this morning. But hey, I'm glad I'm here.
I'm glad they keep approving you being a part of what we do. Now, the word celebrity and why James and I do this show and building it as it, you know, you'll be brought on as it's in bigger places and bigger things. But the word celebrity means to celebrate. It's different than famous.
Yeah.
Right. We celebrate. And so it's celebrating Owen. And, you know, as far as the entrepreneurship goes, that's what really, to me, makes you such an exceptional example to our community of what entrepreneurship's about. And behaviors, Owen, good behaviors are defined by us. Good behaviors are behaviors to get us to where we want to be or better. Bad behavior interferes with us. And a lot of times people confuse behaviors, because your good behavior, James, may be my bad behavior, depending on where we want to go,
exactly.
And vice versa. And a lot of times we end up going somewhere we don't want to go, and we're confused by our behavior. We get caught in behaviors and can't get out of those behaviors. And yet the celebrity entrepreneur side, the celebration of the entrepreneur, gets lost.
Yeah.
And I want to celebrate Owen today, because what he has done as an entrepreneur with bad behavior and good behavior will take him to where he wants to be or better in the total human experience, the long. And that's why I want to be a part of his journey and do whatever I can to amplify his stories so that people learn these lessons of celebrity entrepreneurship and of behaviors. So Owen, when I first knew about you, it was more as a USC football player. And a lot of the people you played with, you were around, guys at Lee Steinberg that we were recruiting or representing. Give us the start of the story of this behavioral need to be a great entrepreneur that started at USC.
Yeah, you gotta remember, I was part of those back-to-back national championship teams at USC under Pete Carroll. And you know, watching all my friends and teammates from the fraternity level to, you know, the football team, they're all signing those big contracts, you know, millions of dollars. And, you know, as a walk-on tight end, obviously I wasn't going that route. And when I saw these guys, you know, making $20 million, you know, playing with Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner, Clay Matthews, you know, all these
Matt Castle, highest paid guy that never played.
never played. Played behind two Heisman Trophy winners and Tom Brady. How can you argue that? But yeah, you know, I'm playing behind these guys, and I'm like, wow, how do I get to this level? Like, it's my mind starts racing. Like, I want to be able to hang out with them and not feel like that blue collar kid from Redondo Beach that's dad who was a construction worker. You know, so my whole life I've been just ambitious, and I'm like, man, what do I got to do? You know? And, you know, I got that big job out of USC working for a USC alumni and, you know, making six figures right out of college. And I was excited. I said, this is great. I'm part of the USC community, and my friends are going to the league, And I'm like, wow, the recession hits. And I was like, man, that's not good. What am I going to do now? I just lost my job working for a big real estate developer. And I remember going to my father and I said, Dad, I got to keep going. I'm not going to stop here. I got to do something during this time. And I said, I think I need you to introduce me to your bookie friend, because I'm going to figure out a way to make money with my contacts and I'm going to book sports. He's like, son, you're a fool. We're not going to do that. You didn't go to USC to be a bookie. And I was so pushy with my dad. I begged him. I said, Dad, I just lost my job. I got to get this bookie job. And he finally made the introduction. And I remember becoming this agent for this bookie. I was like, I have so many USC clients. I have professional athletes. I got, you know, my friend Matt Leinart stayed in Paris Hilton. I said, I got everyone in Hollywood that will bet with me. I said, just give me the opportunity. And I remember I was so young. I was like 22 at the time. And I was the guy didn't believe in me. In the first 6 months, I made him $1 million. I collected $1 million in cash from my clients. And he gave me a whopping 30%. I said, wait a minute. You're giving me 30%. These are my clients. I said, how does this work? You're getting all the money, but I'm the one doing all the work. So, you know, I put my head down and I said, you know, I'm going to figure out a way to become a bookie myself. I don't need this guy. These are my customers. So I remember flying to Costa Rica, which was the mecca of sports booking. And I went, you know, door to door, basically looking for an office where I could, you know, have a satellite office, an offshore phone number, a server, and my own website, betodog.com. And that's what I did. And I remember, you know, going down to Costa Rica, and people are looking at me like, who's this young kid, man? And I figured it out. You know, it cost me $10,000 a month to have this office with, you know, people answering my call center and moving my sportsbook lines. And I got really big, really fast. And I remember getting all these A-list celebrities and athletes and all my fraternity brothers from USC gambling with me. And I'm making like $1 million a month booking bets.
Nice.
So
starting to catch up on the bad behavior too, which is getting fun for me.
So, you know, unbeknownst to me, I'm booking bets everywhere. And I don't care because I have so many people that are working under me now. I have like 23 agents at the time, and they're all like sub bookies of me. And I'm giving them, you know, more than that 30% that bookmaker was giving me years back. I was giving my guys 50%. I said, hey, we're 50-50 partners. You're doing all the work. I said, we'll be 50-50 partners. Whatever your clients lose, you take 50, I'll take 50, and we all win. And they love my business mindset. And no one was doing it in the business at that point. And I remember I had a customer. I started getting so big, I went international, and I had a customer out of Mexico. And one of my sub bookies was, he was living in Newport Beach, and I used to always meet him at the Javier's in the Newport Coast. And he would bring me bags of cash.
Yeah.
And he would bring me duffel bags. I'm like, man, you got the best customer. This guy was losing like $200,000 a week. And this agent's just bringing me cash. And I'm just like, wow, man, I didn't even want to know who his customer was. But he finally told me, he says, yeah, my customers, man, he's out of Mexico, buddy. He wants you to increase his line so he can bet bigger. I'm like, no problem. The guy's paying. So the guy finally cracked me. And I remember it was like a $250,000 crack. And I told on Sunday night, I called the agent and I said, hey, you're going to have to come pick up this money because I want you to deliver this bag to your customer ASAP, man. I want him to see that we pay on Monday morning. No one does it in the business. And he says, no problem. So he came over Sunday night. I remember I was watching the Raiders. He was about to hit a 5-pick parlay that was going to pay him out like 240. And I said, come pick this bag up. As soon as you get to him Monday morning, you call me, let me know it's been dropped off. And sure enough, 8 a.m. Monday morning, he dropped that bag off. He said, I'm just leaving Mexico. I'm like, great. He came back and he says, hey, my uncle was really impressed how you paid him on Monday. I said, well, great. That's good. He's paid us on time. I said, we're just taking care of him like any other customer we take care of. And that's how it needs to be done. And he then brought me an encrypted phone and said, my uncle would like to speak to you. And I'm like, what the heck is this? An encrypted phone. And it didn't have any way to communicate on the microphone. The microphone was taken out. And I looked at it, it's a BlackBerry, and the GPS was taken out. So there's all it is basically an encrypted email. And you got to enter like six different passwords to get into this thing. And I'm like, okay. And the guy's speaking to me. He's speaking to me in Spanish. He says, Weto, I like the way you do business. He says, I think you could help me out. And I said, all right, well, this is a VIP customer. I'm going to help him out any way I can. I'm an entrepreneur, right? I'm an entertainer. I said, whatever you need, sir. I called him Mr. Jefe because that was his name saved in the phone. And I
like it.
I said, Mr. Jefe, whatever you need, I'm here for you. And it started small, James and Dave. It started with, you know, hey, can you drop off 100,000 in Corona for one of my workers? Can you have a 200,000 dropped off in Florida? And I'm doing all these things. I'm thinking, yeah, no problem. He's like, anything you drop off for me, I'm going to give you 10%. So if you drop off 200, I give you 220 wherever you need it. And it worked good because at the time I needed to pay my workers in Costa Rica. You know, my office started to grow. So I'm sending these wires to Costa Rica to pay my employees, you know, pay for my home out there that I'm building. And I started getting so close to Mr. Jefe. He really was like, man, he was amazed how I moved. Every time that phone went off at 2 a.m, whether I was at the club or in my bed, I would answer and I would respond to this guy. And he's like, man, I need you to pick up $1 million in cash in Texas. I'm like, $1 million in cash in Texas. He says, don't worry, I'm paying you your 10% for this one too. I'm thinking to myself, I'm scratching my head. I'm like, well, what's the catch, right? And then he mentioned,
what could it be? What could it be?
I was like, what's the catch? He's like, we're not allowed over there in that territory. And I was like, oh boy, I think I'm in a little deeper than I thought. But I'm 24 years old, I'm saying $100,000 sounds pretty damn good. So I said, well, I'll pick up that $1 million. And that's what I did. I remember picking it up. I flew a private plane over there and I picked up $1 million, and it was from a gardener out of all people. And he said, the gardener said, this is quite a El Jefe. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, man, this is like cartel territory, right? I'm at Brownsville Airport. And this is at the time, I want to say it's the Zetas. And it made sense that he wasn't allowed over there because it was his rivalry. And I was like, okay, this is starting to make sense. This guy's a big cartel guy, but at the end of the day, who cares? He's just betting with me. I'm just taking his bets. I'm helping him a little here and there, clean his money. And he's giving me 10% on the dollar. I said, it's a no brainer. I already got the cash all around the US. It's just one hand to another. And I'm making 10 points a day. I mean, who can do that? So, you know, push comes to shove, and then he hits me with this famous question, the question that landed me in federal prison. He says, Weto, do you have by chance anybody in Australia? Because we're going to do the same thing, but I'm going to make you a millionaire overnight. And I was like, man, you know, I'm thinking back to that. My dad driving 6 hours a day in the car, in his construction truck, going to and from Redondo Beach to LA and just working, you know, 60-hour weeks. I'm thinking to myself, $1 million a day. I said, my dad's probably never made that in his lifetime. And I'm thinking to myself, I said, well, yeah, I got people in Australia. I got an aunt. I said, what do you need? He says, I'm going to make you a millionaire overnight. You're going to do the same thing you're doing. I'm like, all right, let's go. So I get over to Sydney, and I'm not moving money this time. Now I'm moving product for this guy. He's got a ton of cocaine over there. And he's like, I need you to move 10 pieces a day. And he goes, you're going to make 50,000 off each one. And I'm like, wow, this sure has blown up. You know, I said, man, what have I got myself into now? But I mean, like I said, I'm ambitious. I'm young at the time. I'm like, I'm going to do whatever this guy wants me to do. You know, I'm an entrepreneur, black market concierge now.
I mean, $500,000 a day is your commission on that, right? I mean, that's enticing.
Thousand, he's got 10 a day. So I'm making 500,000 in one day. And then he ups it. He's like, okay, we're doing 20 now. So now I'm making $1 million a day. I'm like, wow, this is going out of control.
So hey, I got to stop you for 1 second and just to ask a question. You know, you're young, ambitious, obviously entrepreneurial in spirit, understanding behaviors. You know, you're involved in a lot of bad behavior. Where did the fear of getting caught? What was was that justified into $1 million a day was enough to take on the fear of getting caught? Or would you have done it for $100,000 a day? I'm always wondering, is it the personality that says, shit, whether it was 10,000 or a million, I was willing to take the risk? Or was that even in consideration?
You know, it was in consideration, but Dave, I'm telling you this, it's very hard for me to say no to anything, right? I'm just so like a go-getter. If you tell me you need a special toothpaste from Brazil, I'm going to figure out a way to get it for you. It's just, that's my mentality in life.
Yeah. And
me to this day, it's still hard for me. People are always asking, hey, can you get me this? Can you see if I can find this? And I'm like, man, this is what got me in trouble, right? So it's.
And then moving from there, just to keep, you know, obviously this continues at $1 million a day until you finally get caught.
Correct.
And then you've been able to, how long was your sentence?
Yeah. You know, I was sentenced to 21 years, and I've currently been down 10 years as of this coming year.
And, but yet you nailed the point, was you're just built differently. You're built to find how to make things work. You get toothpaste in Brazil. I'm the guy that figures out how I get toothpaste from Brazil. So how'd you figure out in 10 years in prison, how to build a business? Tell me about what your mindset was. Here you are in jail. Everybody else kind of dreams about, when I get out, I'm going to build my business. What makes you so remarkable to me is that you're the only person I've ever met that is so entrepreneurial that you created a business in prison, legal business with support of the system in prison. What did you do?
You know, my mindset was like, okay, these guys are not going to break me. Everyone else around me is eating soups. They're just depressed. I'm like, this is not for me. This is not how I function. So I just started. I remember I said, you know, I'm going to go back to school. So I earned my master's degree while incarcerated. I was like, I got to get my MBA. This is going to keep me going. It's going to keep my mind right. And I said, you know what? I got to write a book. I got to tell the story. The California Kid, I wrote the book. I was like, okay, I've done the two things that meant the most to me. I said, this is just going to keep me motivated to keep going. Whether I'm in here for 20 years or a life sentence in Australia, I got to keep going. And I remember I discovered this thing on accident. I was making my protein shake one day, and I was putting in my protein shakes chocolate, some non-fat milk from the kitchen. And then I had these guys that would smuggle me out bananas, and I would pay for the bananas because it was very hard to get fruit in prison.
How much does a banana cost? That's a quick question.
A banana in prison costs a stamp, and a stamp's around 50 cents. Just depends what compound you're at, but usually between 50 to 60 cents.
Oh, that's kind of
cool. So it's for me, it's great, but people in there, they're like 50 cents. Well, I can get a soda pop or I can get two soups. That's how their mindset works. Mm. So to me, it's all about health. And I've been healthy my whole life, being an athlete. So I said, I'm going to take the peanut butter from the commissary. I'm going to take the milk from the kitchen. I'm going to take these bananas, and I'm going to use the protein powder they sell us. And I'm going to make these shakes, and they're going to be for after my workout. You know, it's my little reward for myself after a hard workout. And one day on accident, I put some in my trash can. We would throw the ice in there because we don't have refrigeration in prison. We only have ice. And I remember the ice was real low, and my cellie said, hey, just throw some salt on there and that'll keep it real cold. And I said, yeah, all right. So I threw some salt on there, and I came back from my workout, and my protein shake had locked up. I said, holy smokes. I said, man, that was a bad idea. He's like, why? He goes, now you can just eat it. It's like ice cream. I said, man, I don't know about that. So I eat it. I'm like, man, it's like ice protein, man. This thing's insane. And he's like, I told you you'd like it. I said, no, I'm doing this every day. Next thing you know, I'm making it for my workout crew. And I got like four guys on my crew, and we're working out every day. And I'm making these shakes for them, and I'm bringing them out to the yard. They're like, man, this is awesome. Why don't you sell these in prison? I said, man, no one's going to buy a protein shake. It's too healthy. You know? And at the time, they're like, dude, this is like ice cream. What are you talking about? No one, they don't sell ice cream here. You got to label it as ice cream. So I remember telling people, hey, I got ice cream. Little did they know it was ice protein, right? So I'm selling ice cream. I'm telling people, I'm just going to throw a big number out there, just hoping they don't buy it so I don't have to keep going, right? So they're like, I said $15. And they're like,
and what do they pay you in for $15? How they pay you?
So they pay in prison currency is stamps. So a flat book is worth $14. A flat book of stamps, which is 20 stamps, is worth $14. And then a mackerel is worth $1. So I would get a flat book of stamps and a mackerel for payment. And I remember the first week I sold 7 because that's all the mop bucket I had that was making them in. Could fit.
Wait, stop. You said mop bucket?
Mop bucket. That's
right. Yeah, sorry. A mop bucket. So they give you a mop bucket to clean your cell once a week.
Okay.
And I would put a trash bag liner, a clean trash bag around the mop bucket, and I would load it up with ice and salt. And I would have my celly every hour. I would have him shake that salt while I have my seven protein shakes in there. And he would shake it, throw a little more salt on it to lock it up and to produce this ice cream, right? So I would be working out, and I'd get back, and sure enough, they are all locked up, and I'd go to unit by unit and sell these ice creams for $15. And eventually, I had about four mop buckets in my room towards the end, towards Super Bowl season, or towards the Super Bowl, towards the football season. I started selling like 30 a week. And I remember on the Super Bowl, it was Super Bowl Sunday. I had an order for 50 of them, and I had the whole cell block making my ice creams. I had my celly, my neighbor. I said, guys, I'm giving everyone an ice cream that helps me. So I had four guys helping me. And I remember I had an order of 50 ice creams for Super Bowl. And I had, you know, I had a whole team working for me, and everyone's happy. They're all getting free ice cream that are working for me. And I said, man, this is a little much, you know, it's overwhelming, but I got to figure out a way now to get more salt. Right. So I monopolized the salt game by going to someone in, you know, service. There's a group of people that work in facilities that are inmates, and they're the only people allowed to get rock salt, because I was in prison in Colorado and they need the rock salt in order to melt the sidewalks. Hmm. So I made a deal with this facilities guy. He was a young Mexican kid from Sinaloa. And I said to he already knew who I was due to my case. And he says, Weta, whatever you need. I said, I'm going to give you $80 a month. $80 a month is unheard of in prison. That's like the highest salary you can get. I said, I'm going to give you an $80 salary, and I'm going to give you an ice cream every week. That's $15 a week. I said, that's equivalent to $140. And he's like, whatever you need. I said, oh, this is what I need. I said, I need you to give me all the rock salt, and you got to do me a favor. You can't sell rock salt to anybody. I said, if they want to buy it, they got to buy it from me. He agreed. We shook hands, and now I have all the rock salt to make all the ice cream. And people are trying to knock me off now. They're seeing how I'm making it. And I'm like, yeah, well, good luck. You got to buy the salt, right? So they come to me and they say, hey, Weta, we'd like to buy some salt. We're trying to make ice cream. I said, no problem. I said, one peanut butter jar is $15. Well, guess what? One peanut butter jar of salt only makes you one ice cream. So they could either buy the ice cream for me for $15, or they can make it themselves and take 4 hours in their day. So people figured out, like, you know what? Let's just buy it from Weta. You know, the California kid, he's selling the ice cream. He's already got it down. Why ruffle his feathers? So I remember when I got out of prison, I was telling my buddy, who's a friend of Dave's, Roland from back east. And I said, Roland, man, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I said, I know I'm released from prison for a reason. There's something. I was released early for a reason. And I don't know what it is yet. And I'm telling him, I said, I was a hustler in prison. I'm telling him, I got my MBA. I wrote my book. I said, the documentary is coming out with Wahlberg. He says, well, what did you enjoy? I said, you know what I enjoyed doing? I actually enjoyed making this protein ice cream. I called it ice protein. And I said, all my friends in prison, all my workout partners, they all loved it. He's like, man, that is a hell of a story. Can I try it? And I remember making it for him. He's like, man, Owen, I think you're onto something. I said, are you kidding me? I said, this is just some bananas, some peanut butter, some protein shake, and some water mixed up. I said, How is this not done yet? He's like, man, there's nobody that makes a ice protein, man. He says there's like Halo Top, but they got like 5 grams of protein. I said, well, my ice cream has 20 grams of protein per serving. He goes, no way. I said, yeah. He goes, man, we got to continue this. So that's what I've been doing this whole time I've been in the halfway house. It's been almost a year now. And I've been in here just working with an ice cream manufacturer, creating my formula of, you know, a low fat yogurt, Greek yogurt, mix it with the protein, the fruits, the probiotics, using monk fruit, and I'm mixing it. And I'm finally, after, you know, 6.5 months of R&D work, I finally figured out how to put it on a stick now. And I have an ice cream bar. I have 4 different flavors that I'm going to be launching during summer. And it's going to be great. It's right in time when I get released from the halfway house in about 3 months. We're just going to go hard and push this brand.
What comes to mind, brother? I know that's a lot.
I mean, just a fascinating story. In fact, I told David jokingly in the beginning of this. I'm like, well, this is an early one. I'll just let him talk. But it has been a treat to hear the story, because I feel like I'm watching a movie. And that's my world, right? Film, TV, and music, and entertainment. And coming from just such authenticity, you know, I'm looking at Dave and kind of like, you know, my eyebrows are going up every 30 seconds or so, because it is such an unfamiliar world for me. And you talking about a circumstance that is objectively not an easy place to be in life with such gusto and enthusiasm and positivity is fucking inspiring. It is really, really cool and really fun to listen to you speak, Owen, and especially to come out of it. Like, you didn't dwell on anything. You didn't reference anything negative. You'd say things that to us is wild. Like, oh yeah, of course I'm using a mop bucket to create my thing to you. It's just like, of course really? You do that. Cause that's what
How about
you had.
Wahlberg? Except. He just mentioned.
You mentioned the documentary with Wahlberg. I want to know which one. Donnie just called me the other day, but you know, I met Mark as well. I guess there's actually a couple more. But anyways, I digress. My point is it's a phenomenal story, and I just want to hear more about it, and I want to hear about the company. And I think that anybody listening to this, the takeaway is, no matter the circumstance, the only option is to continue, is to find the positive, find the good, find the solution. And looking at somebody like yourself, who has been in, again, objectively, one of the hardest situations that a human being can go through, and you still have found the positivity and potentially a fantastic business. Man, I commend you, and I'm inspired and very much appreciate you sharing the story. And I want to try this fucking ice cream.
Yeah. And Owen, just to interrupt for 1 second, because this is relative to what James and I were talking about this morning. One of the biggest things that happened to entrepreneurs, and your story so outrageous, is they say, I'll do this when.
Yeah.
Right. You had every opportunity as an entrepreneur. Forget the whole great movie documentary, the amazing story of being a billionaire for the cartel. You know, that's ridiculous. But what amazes me is I deal with entrepreneurs. You know, I have another protein company, and I gave them your story. It's called Scott's Protein Balls. And they were made because his wife had a breast cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a clean ball of protein. But they're always fighting the lapse of time. It's always like, well, we can't do this until this happens. Like, your story to me is a testament to, like, why wait? Yeah. Like, you got your MBA, you wrote a book. It's like, okay, so now why am I going to wait? If I want to start a business, why do I have to wait 10 years? Why do I have to wait till I get out of the halfway house? Yeah. It's like, let me keep pushing to shorten that distance that most people create themselves.
Yeah, that's right. I just want cash flow. By the time I get out of this halfway house, I want a, you know, well-oiled machine. And that's how I look at it.
What a one. So do at least give us a little bit of synopsis here in the background on the documentary you mentioned.
Listen, I can't say much about it, but just stay tuned. It's awesome. I watched it. It brought a tear
to your story. It's your story, though.
It's the rise and fall of basically, you know, this USC golden boy to turning international drug kingpin.
Like, when I think of your movie and your story, I think of like War Dogs, which was, you know, Ollie North diverting arms in what's called transshipment and diversion. And people watch War Dogs and they wouldn't have thought it could possibly even be real.
Yeah.
Right. And I love stories that are so fascinating, that are, you know, true, enough true that you sit there and go, anything in the world's possible. And behavior determines how we view what those stories are about and what lessons we take from it. And I'm sure a lot of people, for you, take a lesson and prejudge you because of your past. How do you deal with people that say, you know what, Owen, I really admire you, but you're a criminal, man. And I'm not forgiving, let's just say, or you know, those people just, yeah, the person's paid their time and it's like, I don't want anything to do that.
I'm not going to take the risk. Right. Have you received it yet?
You know, I accept it, right? I went to prison, I broke the law, and I deserve to go to prison, no doubt. But I tell people, listen, do you believe in a second chance? Because if you do, you got to remember, I was putting these bad things on the streets. I said, now I'm going to healthy treats. I said, it's a comeback story. Everyone wants to support the guy that was the underdog. I said, I've been the underdog my whole life. I said, this time around, you know, I've learned my lesson. Prison was the best thing that could have happened to me. And I really feel that I've rehabilitated and I've recovered from this, and I'm bouncing back.
That's amazing.
And you're walking the talk.
You know, I was literally reading the back package of Dave's Killer Bread. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that story, but I'd imagine you are. And I thought that was just amazing. And now getting to hear a real life example of it is, I think that's phenomenal. You know, and look, I'm sure we could have a whole another conversation about what could be improved within our system, but it does exist for this purpose. And the fact that there is the possibility, the potential for someone like yourself to be rehabilitated gives me some faith and excitement. You know, the options are there. You can educate yourself. You can get a master's degree. That makes me feel good about it. Again, with the huge caveat of, I'm sure there is a lot we can improve upon. But again, it makes me very impressed with you, your tenacity, your eagerness, and your positivity. It's really wonderful.
Can I ask one last question, Owen, because I never thought of this, but as you were talking through the monopolization of the market, which, you know, just shows his business savvy of buying up the resources and taking control and, you know, and overpaying people, which is actually part of Napoleon Hill in the philosophies of success that we have at Napoleon Hill Institute of, you get more by giving more, and your whole business is a bookie. 50%, nobody was doing that. Nobody was delivering the money on time. Nobody was doing these things that you do. But we always, you know, the higher the level, the greater the devil. And I think it's part of your story. The higher the level, the bigger, the greater the devil. Did people threaten you, or was there physical, when you took and monopolized in, you know, all the rock salt, was anybody threatening you or any of that? Or is that just not, that's all in a different type of prison than the one that you went to?
No, in prison, you know, it's all fair and game if you make that contract with somebody, right? So it's all about contracts, and you can't disrespect a man's contract. If that guy wants to sell me the rock salt, that's on him. Mm. And if he locks it in, people respect that because that's the guy's hustle, right? And if you're going to take away from the facilities guy and then you're going to threaten him, then there's going to be issues on the yard, because you got to remember, it's very political. You go by races, right? So if someone says, hey man, you can't be doing that, well, you got to talk to the Mexican shot caller, because you guys are going to have an issue with him. So everyone respects people's business. And by myself monopolizing it, I was really just helping another inmate at the time. And it's up to him whether he wants to make that deal or not.
I love it, man. Well, what a great example of a celebrity entrepreneur, not the most typical location, but I still find it, as an entrepreneur myself and a mentor, a teacher, and a coach, you are an amazing human being, someone who I want to be around. I can't wait until you don't have to have permission to hang out with me. I have to get permission from my wife to hang out with James, so don't feel bad. But she gave it to me, and I look forward to getting permission from my wife to hang out with you the way you've gotten permission to hang out with me. The amazing Owen Hansen. Check out the California Kid. There's going to be so much content out there when he gets out. And don't forget the very first 20-gram protein ice cream bar. I know they're delicious, by the way, as well, and besides nutritious. Thank you, Owen. We'll have you back on multiple shows. We'll see you in person soon.
Thank you, guys. Fight on. Take care.
Right. Look forward to meeting you in person one day soon, buddy.
There he is, man.
Wow. I mean, I just, what a treat.
It's perfect for a Sunday morning, right?
We weren't joking about that. I've been sitting back, drinking my coffee, just basically imagining this movie. But this is this man's
And name. We got like 1/10 of the story. Like, it gets deep, because I want to get to the entrepreneur side.
Yeah.
You can get caught up in that amazing, like, when he starts talking about the cartel, and how deep he was in
He's told the story enough times that he doesn't mention cartel. You know it.
Trust me. And it's billions of dollars. It's not millions. He was in the billions.
Wow.
That's how much money's involved in this whole thing. And yet back down to ice buckets, mop buckets of ice cream.
Right. And so is it worth it? Right?
I would tell you, I admire his cellmate because, you know, you look at these catalysts in your life and without his cellmate putting the salt.
Wouldn't have worked.
He would have moved to something else because that's the way he is, but it wouldn't have worked. And the universe has a great way of coinciding with where we want to be or better. Yeah. And if we align our behaviors, mindset, heartset, and handset wise, we get there. That's my takeaway of the day. James, what were you thinking?
Well, my mind is actually going to the cellmate and beyond that to the community of this prison. I know very little about prison. And
thank goodness, me too.
I don't plan on finding out a lot more.
Good.
And I don't mean to make a joke about that.
Right. I'm with you.
We've all been in positions in our lives, especially younger, especially when you want money, where you're offered an opportunity to go that seems shady. I'm glad that I've said no to those, despite the obvious appeal to making millions or billions of dollars a day. But there's your trade-off, right? Do you want to have the most amazing, ridiculous life for a very short period of time and then either be dead or in prison? I'm choosing that. I'm doing it brick by brick. But what I'm fascinated by and impressed by in many ways is the community, right? The prison goes by contracts and go by respect. Mm. And so while in my mind or your mind, we might go to like TV shows or movies you've seen and be like, why doesn't somebody just take it from you or fight you for it? And it's like, wow, it wasn't just a cellmate.
It's a culture.
It was the entire culture of this prison that, nope, that man made a deal with that man. We're going to respect it. We're not going to fuck with their hustle. And in some ways, we're going to support it. It's pretty wild. I mean, how grateful would I be to be in that position or should he be to be in a system that at least operates by some rules? I mean, hell, maybe more rules than in the real world to some degree. So
it's funny. I just did a training last Friday. I've done for over 26 years, free trainings on Friday about rules. And so check that out because it is applicable to what you're talking about, the time aspect and the lessons there as well. Yeah. What I love about Celebrity Entrepreneur with James Maslow is that we bring different pieces and parts out of everyone in the idea of celebrating them and entrepreneurship. And to do that as celebrity entrepreneurs has really meant a lot because it does mean more when coming from a celebrated soul like an Owen Hansen and James Maslow. I'm here live in Nashville. James, everyone, thanks for joining me.
What a treat. Thank you for coming to the house, doing it from my studio. And Owen, thank you so much for sharing that story. And I'm intrigued. I want to know more. I want to know how we can support.
It's going to be awesome. James and David here with Office Hours with Celebrity Entrepreneur with James Maslow. Thanks for joining us.
See you on the next one.
Be more interested than interesting.